Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful. And the podcast tonight, the occasion, the event that brings us here tonight is Edmonton's getting kicked right out of the playoffs by the Anaheim Ducks. I'm here with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Good evening, David.
So, Bruce, in the end, a pretty disappointing game, not just because the Oilers lost, but even when the Oilers were up 1-0 in the first, I never had a sense they were the better team in this game. And that feeling only grew stronger as the game went on. In the second period, the Oilers had zero scoring chances. The Ducks had 10. And the Oilers were lucky not to get blown out that period. This just, they just looked tentative, back on their heels most of the game, particularly in the second period. So there wasn't any part in the game where I thought the Oilers dominated in that game. I thought the Ducks, the Oilers were back on the heels the whole game. I could really see the turning point. There was a play in the second period where Darnell Nurse had the puck, and he just, as he tends to do in these key moments still, he just totally kind of ate it, backed up, didn't make a play, didn't pass it. I don't know what he's thinking. It's because it's funny, when the Oilers are behind again, Nurse starts taking off like a rocket and making plays, but he's still at that stage where he's learning the game, and he's learning to play under pressure. But that was typical of the Oilers that whole period, the whole team. I thought the McDavid line was particularly weak defensively. I was expecting them to get scored on all game, and they did in the end get scored on. They weren't playing strong down low. So congratulations to the Ducks. I thought they were certainly the better team in that game. Were they the better team in the series, though, Bruce?
Well, that's an open question. I mean, they were definitely the better team tonight. I think some of the messages, the stats messages, were mixed, but I saw Anaheim is dominating both blue lines, for starters. The Oilers had a hell of a time getting the puck over their own line and a hell of a time keeping the puck in the Anaheim end for any length of time. It seemed like the Oilers would tool around and they get one shot from a bad angle and the puck would come right out of the zone every time. And whereas in Edmonton's end, they just struggled to get the puck out, especially in that second period. Man, that long change, like all the teams have to deal with it, but it seems like it's a particular killer for the Oilers. They have a lot of games where the second period they just suck, and tonight was one of them. As for the better team in the series, the Oilers outscored the Ducks over the course of the seven games. In fact, over the last five games, they scored the same number of goals, and Edmonton won one game and Anaheim won four. It's just one of those distribution things. I thought they were very, very unlucky to lose games four and five. And that was the key sort of heart of the series. But,
do you think, Bruce, that the referees cost the Oilers that game?
What, games four and five?
No, excuse me, cost tonight's the Oilers that game? Series. Not that game, series? That's the series, yeah.
You know, you can make a real strong case for it. It's going to sound like whining, but geez, those two goalie interference calls were... those are rough, and they were crucial calls in both games in terms of the context of the games. They could have called those calls in Game 6, but it wouldn't have mattered much, right? But in a tight game, huge, huge difference. And I'm still real sour about that tying goal in Game 5. I thought that was blatant holding goalie interference by Kessler that somehow got missed by everyone.
There was a real bad one early in this game too. The Ducks almost scored on. Brandon Montour took a shot in the first period, zinger of the shot, and Talbot's lying there prone on the ground, and the puck's beside him. I'm thinking, like, what the heck happened there? Well, on the replay, you see Ricard Raquel essentially slewfoots him with his stick. Talbot, he takes his stick he's going for the puck, but he puts his stick right through Talbot's legs and barrels him over. So it should have, you know, anyway. In the end, they definitely cost the Oilers one game. The interesting thing is, it's hard to say if they cost them the series, because I think that the Oilers used the motivation of the terrible call in Game 5. It directly impacted Game 6. The Oilers just were bent on winning that, and to hell with the NHL, to hell with the Ducks, to hell with everyone on earth, they were going to win that game. So to say that the Oilers won, you know, they won five games, some of the fans are saying, you know, you can't say the Oilers were going to win Game 6 without Game 5. We don't know what would have happened. And I'll tell you what, Bruce, there was one huge call in this game that went the Oilers' way. The Ducks had a power play. The Oilers were up 1-0. It was the second period, and Adam Larson, 30 seconds into that that power play, Larson broke Corey Perry's stick with a slash. They have been calling that all year long, yeah. Every single time.
I thought that was a penalty.
Houston, Jim Houston said that's a penalty. Like, and Craig Simpson was saying this. Then suddenly there was no penalty. So that was a huge break that the Oilers caught, and that would have been a 5-on-3 for the Ducks for 90 seconds. That is a very, very significant non-call. You know, it's not quite up there with the Perry's interference, and certainly not up there with Kessler's in terms of its impact on the game. But in terms of evening out, well, there goes a wee bit back towards equilibrium, although clearly, you know, the Ducks got away with a whole heck of a lot more all series long.
One could argue that during the Oilers power play, which carried over into the second period when Kessler cross-checked Draisaitl in the face off the second period face-off, that Oilers could have had a two-man advantage. But you had to know in Game 7 the refs would put the whistles away, and they did. There was just one power play for each team, and in a series where the Oilers scored 7 power play goals and Anaheim scored 2, a game with basically no rules was not in Edmonton's favor tonight, and they sure struggled to generate much at even strength.
But I don't think that had much to do with the outcome of this game. I think that the inexperience of the Oilers shone through. I mean, players like Nurse, for instance. Sorry for picking on him, but he's not going to be that player next year, I don't think, or the year after that. He's going to go into that game, and he's going to play like he did in the third period, where he was rushing the puck and attacking hard. He's going to do that all game long. He's not going to let him beat himself, and that's what happened that game. Is he beat himself in that game. And McDavid, the same thing. He did not have a strong game. He didn't have a strong series against the Ducks. And he's not going to let that happen again. It's not going to happen. So, I just think they're inexperience came through. You know, the funny thing, though, Bruce, third period, Oilers down 2-1. Connor McDavid has 3 cracks point blank with a sprawling goalie on the ice. I mean, you wouldn't want it any better, right, in terms of tying the game up. And with McDavid, with a puck on his stick, the goalie prone, and he couldn't get one of those 3 shots in. That was a rough one. And RNH had a really great deflection in the first 2 that he couldn't score on. But, you know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, I guess. But I just think the Ducks were the better team in the game, and I'm going to say in the series, because this – you got to be able to dominate in this game and come through in this game. And the Oilers just totally fell flat, so – I'm giving it congratulations to the Anaheim Ducks. I think they were, in the end, the better team.
Well, they were the better team tonight.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it did come down to a 3-3 series. And, you know, I have to say I'm not a fan of the Ducks. I got too many players that I really dislike. And I'll be rooting hard for Nashville in the next series. So it's a little bit of a bitter pill to be saying Ryan Kessler shut down Connor McDavid in the series, but I think that's a big part of it. I mean, tonight McDavid played a few seconds under 20 minutes at 5-on-5, during which time the Oilers were outshot 10-4. They got 4 shots during his 20 minutes. You know, that's just not the type of powerhouse offense that you expect from a high-end player, and their defense got the better of him. He was trying. He did some good stuff, but they just couldn't penetrate.
No, and you know, again, they're going to have to figure that out. Maybe he'll get some different line mates, and you know, next year is next year. So it wasn't a great game. speaking of not great games, I thought like Milan Lucic, his physical play had been exemplary and outstanding and made a huge impression on everybody in Game 6. But wow, he did not have his legs. If I was grading the game, I'd be giving him a 2 best for that game. There was one play in the second period. One play in the second period, Bruce, where the puck's behind the Oilers' net and Jakob Silverberg is wide open in the slot. And Slepyshev gives him the old... And Lucic are kind of out there, both kind of in the area of Slepyshev and... of Silverberg. And Slepyshev gave the old nail Yakupov, is what I call it, where he points at the player who needs to be checked, but he doesn't go check him himself. Doesn't go. He just points like, someone do something. That's not good. Someone do something. And Lucic was wandering in the red light zone, and the red light zone is not covering anyone and not blocking any passing lanes. So Silverberg was left wide open for two absolutely massive scoring chances, which Talbot saved. He saved both of them. And it was interesting. They were such big saves that they actually inspired the Oilers to do a little bit better. They came on the next two or three shifts and had their best moments. They never got any scoring chances, but they had their best moments of the second period, which was just a horror show all around.
It was a pretty dreadful period.
I just had no hope for the Oilers after that period, honestly. I didn't think they were going to come back, and they didn't. Mm-hmm. What did you think of maligned 666 line, Bruce? Sixers.
Well, Lucic, of course, is the true.
They weren't. Excuse me, they didn't
he's
have.
He's on a different line.
I guess the 6-6-4 line, yeah.
Continue your thought about him. I thought he was dreadful tonight, and for a guy that was brought in to be a big game player with 10 games, 7 on his resume, I was anticipating him to come up with a big performance tonight. And I think you nailed it when you said he didn't have his leg. You know, sometimes these big guys, they get out of bed and they just don't have their coordination or whatever, and they just don't have it. He couldn't skate. He couldn't move the puck. He must have turned officially 2 giveaways. Unofficially, geez, it seemed like 100. I mean, they passed the puck to him, and he'd either not get it over the blue line, or he couldn't get it to center to shoot it in evenly. Like, he turned it over between the blue line and the red line. 0 shot attempts on the night.
He's got to lose some weight, I think, like Maroon and Cassian did in the offseason. He's got to get a little lighter on his feet. To keep up with the game. And hopefully he can do that. Like, Maroon did do it. Cassian did do it.
Yeah.
So go to the same trainer, Milan. Hire whoever they hired. Mm-hmm. Eat whatever they ate. And see if you can come back just a step faster, because I thought Maroon was actually pretty good. Cassian was missing in action tonight, but after a fairly strong playoffs. What did you think of, what did you think of the 6-6-4 line, Bruce?
Well, you know, I actually really liked Benoit Pouliot's game tonight. I thought he really came hard. He was playing physical. He was—he led the team in shots. He had 4 shots. He led the team again, second game in a row, at least with takeaways, with 3. Nobody else had more than 1. Like, he was battling and winning board battles, which
puck protecting.
As a group, they weren't doing, and puck protecting, they weren't doing. And I liked Pouliot's game a lot. He had a good shot that Nuge tipped. That was a dangerous chance.
So close. The Oilers needed that goal to win the game.
Well, they needed that line to bloody score. I mean, yes. 13 games in the playoffs and no goals for any of them. That's almost unfathomable.
You know, and we've supported Jordan Eberle up until this moment, but he was terrible against the Ducks.
He had a bad series.
He has got to tonight,
but he couldn't penetrate ever.
He's not fast enough and strong enough, Bruce. He's got to go. He's got to do something with in terms of his own physical training. He's got to get stronger and faster. I don't know, more determined. I don't know if that's in his repertoire, but he can get stronger and faster. He's got to figure out a way. Or the NHL game's going to pass him by. I mean, he really he did get 20 goals this year, but he struggled all year. And he was not the dynamic player. And you pointed out in one of our earlier conversations about his injury. What was that, like almost 2 years ago now?
The shoulder?
The shoulder. He's not been the same since that injury. Well, be the same. Like, work, if you can, work on that shoulder. Like, maybe he won't be the same player. Injuries really do take out a lot of players and diminish their careers ever after that injury, and maybe that's the case with Eberle, but wow, that he has no ability to get the puck to the net anymore. He just is, as the one rather rude comment, you know, button hook muffin shot that about nailed his series against the Ducks.
Well, those guys, that line had by far the best shot shares tonight, which is one metric that I put value in. It's not the be-all and end-all, of course, because it doesn't necessarily talk about the quality of shots. But they, you know, they weren't able to cash. Like,
what was the, what was their shot share?
Well, for Eberle, it was 8-4-4 against. For Pouliot, the same. And for RNH, it was 8-4-6 against, shots on goal. And they had, you know, good Corsi, good Fenwick, like right across the board. But just, and I don't know what their scoring chances were, but...
I haven't totaled it up.
Yeah. They just didn't have, you know, I mean, they broke even, like 0-0 on the scoreboard. And for $16 million playing against the other team's third line, you got to win that battle. You can't just saw it off and say it.
Yeah, I'm not as
got to win that battle sometimes.
Not as down. I thought Nuge was okay. Like, he's been kind of okay this series. I don't think he's been bad. I don't. There's a tendency right now to lump him in the same boat as Eberle. They are not in the same boat. You put Eberle with McDavid. You put Nugent Hopkins with McDavid or Drysdale. You'll see that guy fly. And until he gets that opportunity, people got to lay off this kind of lumping them in the same kind of soft skill, not getting it done category. I think it's, I couldn't disagree more with that characterization that he hasn't played strong two-way hockey in the playoffs. He did not score. He did generate a lot of chances through the playoffs, including this game. He got one grade A chance that he could not deliver on. So Bruce, let's, Pouliot, I also thought he played really well. And again, if Benoit Pouliot makes up his mind to win the puck by using his body and puck protect, he can still be a decent NHLer, it looks to me. If he just wants to win stick in there and win stick battles, he's done. Because he was done most of the year, and it was very frustrating to watch that player most of the year. But you can see there's still a player there. And again, he's going to have to dedicate himself to physical training, because puck protecting is no easy thing. But he can do it. And when he does do it, he's an effective player still. So that's a little bit hopeful.
Well, you'd like to think there's a 15-goal scorer in there based on his past history. But what was he this year, a 5-goal scorer? Like, these guys lost their offense.
He's untradeable, right?
It just went away.
Yeah, he's untradeable.
And, you know, he did play good in the playoffs, but, you know, a goal or two would have made a big difference in this series. All those 3-1 goal games that they lost in the last four, one goal in any of those games would have made a huge difference. And they just couldn't, cash.
All right. So we're down in the dumps. That's evident.
I am.
So am I.
I was at the Rogers Palace tonight, and there was a full house there, and a big celebration, of course, when the Kajula weird goal. That was quite the play, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a weird, Kajula, what a terrible goal. Play by Shea Theodore. Yeah. Whew. Yeah. Stinker.
Those are the rookies, you know, Slepyshev and Kajula. They scored a goal in each of the last 5 games of the series.
Yeah, so that's
they got production from those guys.
Yeah, and then promising.
Some of the big money veterans just couldn't deliver on the offensive side of the puck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's disappointing. If you can't deliver on the offensive side, then you better get it done defensively. And that's where Lucic on the winning goal, you know, he got burned on the zone entry, and then he was tooling around in the defensive zone after that.
Him and Chris Russell. Chris Russell, all year long, people have been complaining about him giving up too much gap. And I have, you know, I don't agree with the Chris Russell detractors in that they think he's a third-pairing guy at best. You know, he played solid top 4 D in the playoffs against two really tough teams. Chris Russell showed himself to be capable of playing on a second pairing in the NHL, but he's not a perfect player. And on that goal, he was way back. He just—they totally gave Getzlaff the zone first. Lucic and then him, and then Lucic. So much room for Getzlaff that Getzlaff could make a cross seam pass. It was terrible, and they didn't have to do that. And it was again endemic on the Oilers. This kind of laying back, not pressing the play. I mean, the Hockey Night, the Sportsnet commentators were saying that they thought the Oilers were pressing the play in the first period. I wasn't buying it. I didn't really. They did outchance them, but. Sami Vatanen missed two sure goals just by missing the net on shots. So the Ducks were unlucky not to have four or five goals that game. Also had to do with Cam Talbot. So Bruce, so we're both down in the dumps. Let's try to cheer ourselves up in this last little part here. What did you think of the season overall?
Well, huge progress. I mean, there's no way around that. The team went from perennially 28th, 29th, 30th to tied for 7th in the NHL. They made the playoffs comfortably. They won a playoff series, made the final 8. So, you know, they're on the outer edge of the top 8 in the league now, which is a huge jump for one season. Chiarelli did a lot of things to change the team, and a majority of them worked out and paid off in terms of, certainly the Oilers are a very different looking team than they have been for way too long. They're bigger, they're meaner, they're tougher to play against, but they've got a lot of skill within that template, and the skill is going to win them a lot of games. It didn't win them tonight's game, unfortunately, but it's a very promising team. Obviously, there's still work to be done, probably lots of work to be done, but I don't know how you can be an Oilers fan and come out of that season anything but encouraged.
Yeah, fantastic season. Just a fantastic season. You know, we were all always waiting, I think, for the wheels to fall off and the team to not make the playoffs or not to bounce back. And, there were certainly a lot of people who hated Chiarelli's deals. I don't know if they were hoping for that to happen, but I don't think they were. But they certainly were loath to give any credit. And whenever anything went wrong, they were quick to get the knives out and start sticking it in there, both Chiarelli and the players they hated.
But some of us are just used to some stuff going wrong. There's been so many years of stuff going wrong. And this one thing that didn't go wrong this year is we didn't run into a huge injury bug, which is the first time. And most of the main players were healthy all year, including Cam Talbot. If anything had happened to Cam Talbot, then maybe the wheels would have come off, but they didn't, and he didn't. And he was a huge part of their success.
Yeah, Nugent Hopkins, Draisaitl and McDavid all played 82 games.
Yeah.
That's massive for the Oilers. And if that happens again next year, that, you know, fingers
they'll
crossed.
They'll move up in the standings.
Yeah. I mean, most people, I think, were predicting in the 85 to 95 point range. And that was considered pretty good if the Oilers did that. That would have been really good. If, you know, 85 points, 85 to 90 points, that would have been a pass for me. That would have been the progress you would have hoped, but for them to get, what did they get, 103 points. No one predicted they would win the first round of the playoffs. No one predicted they would take the Anaheim Ducks to 7 games. So what a fantastic year.
Well, you know who did kind of predict that? And I'm trying to remember if it was Chiarelli or McCullough.
Not Chiarelli, no.
After game number 82, when they got second in the division, and they got the good matchup against San Jose, and one of the brain trust guys said, geez, I sure would like to get first, because looking ahead to the second round of the playoffs, sure would be nice to have that 7th game at home. Do you remember one of them?
Yeah, Chiarelli said that, but that's different. Yeah. To be fair to all the predictors, by the time of the playoffs, most people were predicting the Oilers would beat San Jose. Mm-hmm. That was the consensus pick of the experts. And both you and I picked them to beat San Jose. So by then, it wasn't any shock that they got by San Jose.
Right. Missing first place cost them the home ice in the seventh game. Yeah, it turned out to be pretty important.
It certainly did. And you picked the Oilers in seven. I picked the Ducks in six. So
I picked Anaheim to collapse in the seventh game.
We were both incorrect.
Damn it.
Oh, well, whatever.
They had to win one eventually. Mind you, Washington Capitals fans are probably saying the same thing. But
ouch.
Yeah, really.
Ouch. That's the one that really hurts. But, Bruce, I'm going to make good on my vow not to watch the rest of the playoffs after the terrible referee call in Game 5. I'm done. Like, I'm not watching the playoffs anymore. What I'm going to do, actually, is go back and watch Bakersfield Condors games. I want to watch the last five games of their season, or at least the last five games when they were still in the playoff hunt, to get a real sense of all the players on that team, including Puljujarvi. So that's my next project.
Well, I've watched the last, this will be 55 straight years of Stanley Cup Finals, except for 2005. I missed the Stanley Cup Finals that year for some reason. Maybe because they didn't actually play the Stanley Cup Finals that year, and I'm still bitter about that. But I've been a continuous hockey fan since 1963, and that sometimes involves gritting your teeth and just staying with it, and I'll stay with it, and I'll watch at least most of the semis.
All right.
And I'll certainly watch the finals, but
sure. Well, if there's anything, interesting, so you'll be starting the year player interview series soon.
Yep.
So as for the podcast, we're going to keep going, and we are planning one either for tomorrow or Friday. We'll review all the players in the playoffs and give them a grade. How about that?
Okay.
And after that, we'll look forward to the summer and start to dig into that. All right, Bruce. Well, thanks again. It was a fun talking to you on the podcast through the playoffs. Too bad it didn't go longer.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And in the meantime, and in between time, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.